Defense experts at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments designed a sort of budget war game under the following premise. Congress will undo sequestration, but DOD will still take roughly the same budget cut, $519 billion over the next decade. But under CSBA scenario, and unlike under sequestration, the cuts would be spread over 10 years rather than happening all at once, and the Pentagon could decide precisely what programs to fund and at what level. To run the game, CSBA gathered around 70 people, retired military officers, DOD civilian leaders, defense industry executives, and experts from other think tanks, and organized them into seven groups. They were given about 600 options for either cutting or increasing funding for programs. And CSBA's Mark Gunzinger says the results were all over the map.
Across the teams, we saw just about every approach. We saw the truly strategy-driven, let's think of the future first, pick the winners first, all the way to, well, this is the way the building works, so we'll work this way too, and we'll just cut everything, and everyone will share pain, and now we have a budget. Not terribly well driven by strategy. In fact, failure to make real strategic choices was essentially sequestration.
The think tank doesn't endorse or decry any of the spending decisions any of the seven groups made, but CSBA did reach some conclusions from the project. Organizers gave high marks to two of the groups that decided to think about what capabilities the military as a whole will need for the next 10 years, rather than running through the typical Pentagon budget process, which allows individual military services to set their own priorities and then submit them for approval to the Defense Secretary and later to OMB. CSBA's Todd Harrison says throwing those procedural stovepipes out the window turned out to be a huge breakthrough.
They sat around and instead of starting by saying, all right, what are we going to cut? You know, and then you've got, you know, your air power guy saying, well, you can't cut, you know, aircraft. And then you've got, you know, your sea power guy saying, we can't cut ships. And everyone's talking about what you can't cut. And everyone gets on the defensive. They took the different approach. They said, all right, what's important in the future? What are we going to add money to? And so they would go around and everyone would say what they thought would be a really critical capability in the future. And then they would look and see what investments do we need to make. So they went around and everybody got to win. Everyone got to pick the winners. And then they said, all right, we ran up a bill and we already have to cut another $500 billion on top of this bill that we ran up. Now we got to give up some things. So everybody already got what they wanted. Then they were willing to give up more, and they're willing to cut deeper even into their own pet areas that they might have otherwise been protective of.
Other groups basically follow the Pentagon's standard budgeting formula and began with the idea that cuts had to be made rather than starting with their most important priorities. They essentially gridlocked while trying to protect all of their own programs, and cuts were made more or less evenly across the military's budget. Harrison says once those groups saw what their more strategically minded counterparts had done, they had quite a bit of remorse.
There was not a lot of consensus around the table. It was more of a, well, you know, people's arms crossed. Well, you know, if you're going to do that to me, then we're going to do this to you kind of thing. So, I mean, that is more of a typical siloed, service-centric approach, if you will, that you would expect out of DOD. There was a lot of dissatisfaction at the end when they saw what other teams had done because the other teams had cut more deeply but then used that money to reinvest in other capabilities, and these teams were kind of sitting there like, well, man, I wish we had that.
And as far as what capabilities the military will need in the future, the teams had a fair amount of agreement. CSBA asked the experts to identify the military's crown jewel priorities that shouldn't be scaled back under any circumstances. They unanimously agreed on several, both offensive and defensive cyber capabilities, special operations forces, undersea warfare, and a next-generation long-range strike aircraft. They also agreed unanimously that some programs would have to endure reduced funding, including the Pentagon's most expensive weapons program, the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter.
Their reasoning was, well, that might give time for the program to mature a little bit more before we proceed with full-scale procurement. Let's accept some risk in the near term, let the program mature, and then we'll invest in that. One team canceled the F-35 outright, again reasoning that the new kinds of scenarios that we see ahead of us, especially in the Pacific region, the geographical challenges we have, the very long ranges and so forth, the challenges that we might have to our forward bases, is less support for short-range aircraft. And not just manned for that matter, but unmanned aircraft.
Despite the wide divergence in approaches the teams took, there were other areas of commonality. For instance, Parison says under any approach to a $500 billion budget reduction, the DoD civilian workforce is going to have to shrink.
All of the teams made significant cuts in the DoD civilian workforce, ranging from 20% to 40% reduction in DoD civilian workforce. Now, I can't say that that is actually part of a strategy, but that is something that all the teams went to when they needed more resources.
Gunzinger and Harrison say it's not surprising the teams found ways to cut DoD's budget. After all, they say the gradual $519 billion cut would be roughly in line with previous downturns in defense spending after the conclusion of wars. The interesting part was that at least a couple teams found ways to start with a strategy and build a budget around it from scratch. Gunzinger, who had a hand in budget and strategy inside the Pentagon for 35 years, says the system is still not designed to allow that.
The point still is the services develop their POMs independently, and they're reviewed by OSC at the end of the process. So there's a lot of momentum behind those budget submissions already by the time they start to have the strategic choices discussion. Whereas the process that you had this kind of a strategic choice discussion up front before the POMs are developed might actually drive some different investments.
Gunzinger and Harrison say the most important lessons they learned from the budget study groups are that DoD needs to think about the overall military the nation will need a decade from now when it builds a budget, and it has to pick budget winners before it decides where to cut. To do that, it also needs to take a holistic view of military capabilities rather than letting each service set its own wish list in stone.
If you want to assess capabilities across the services, you got to do it before they lay it all down in their palm and, you know, it's 90% locked. If you want to begin with the end in mind, if you want to think ahead to the future and then work backwards into what you need to be doing today, that's got to be a joint thing. You can't have services doing it independently. It won't work. If you want to pick the winners first across the services, again, this has got to be a joint exercise from the beginning. So
this isn't just our opinion. This came out of the teams. Yeah. We discussed the process and the way things were, and the teams acknowledged, well, that's kind of not the way we do it today.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.